Support for Technology and Innovation Reporting comes from SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome to the May 17th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your tech questions. In the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls is Joel Brovelite. Hi, Joel.
Hey.
It's great to have you on this Now the Sun's Peeking Out Friday.
I know. Well, hopefully it lasts a while.
Well, I hope this bodes well for us. This is marvelous. And also on the show today, SDPB's social media marketing expert, Heather Benson, is here. Hey, Heather.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show again and talk about all the really, I guess, interesting things we've put together for the show today. A reminder to listeners, this is a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we will help try to provide that answer. On Facebook, we are simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. Don't be shy. Send us a text. It's 956-STPB. That's 956-7372. Our phone number is 800-852-0214. Twitter users, you can send your questions to me at KentSTPB. And, of course, again, that email address, inthemoment@sdpb.org. And Amos Asop just walked in the door. Hey, Amos.
Hey, how's it going?
Great having you here.
Glad to be here.
And what's the latest in the security end of technology?
You know, we actually just had a great security conference yesterday. The Siouxland Cybersecurity Forum was yesterday at the downtown Hilton Garden Inn. Had a number of great speakers. Some great topics, things like incident response, which is one of those things that it's like an insurance policy, right? It's something you never want to use, but everybody really should be paying attention to and should have a plan for. What else did we talk about? We talked about things like SD-WAN, which is a software-defined WAN, and the security components that come with that. Endpoint protection, what's the newest, latest, and greatest, and that sort of thing. So a lot of great security
topics.
Was
there an aha moment for you yesterday? Was there like I never considered that?
There was a couple of things there that stood out to me. You know, the technology is just always changing, and nothing that without having the entire background of where we came from that I could easily explain in the next 49 minutes. But there is some pretty interesting stuff.
Well, that's very cool. That's very cool. Well, maybe we can eke a little bit more of that out of you during the show today. We've got a whole host of things we want to talk about. It kind of really runs the gamut of I guess, possible topics.
Sure.
We got hardware. We have software. I kind of wanted to start out today. President Trump signed an executive order that barred U.S. companies from using Huawei gear just a couple of days ago. And that was Wednesday, I guess.
You know, I've got a Huawei watch on right now, as a matter of fact.
Have you?
And, you know, Huawei's been having some problems for I shouldn't say problems. They've been accused of these backdoors in their switches and routers and that sort of stuff for years and years and years. It's always been a concern. Now it's actually coming to the point where, Trump is making it so that we can't use them. I don't know that my watch falls under that level of can't be used, but
well, it's from using from if it's going to pose a national security risk. So you can't use the telecommunications equipment if it's going to,
Sure.
So I don't think your watch is going to
probably not.
Is going to be a national security risk. But
Huawei makes some tremendous hardware, though. At the time that I got this watch, which was, I bet I've had this 3 years, 3.5 years. It was technologically the most advanced watch you could get at the time. And because of that, it's not out of date at this point, right? Even 3 years later, Huawei makes some pretty amazing innovations in taking new technologies and making them smaller. That being said, some of those technologies might be used to, quote unquote, spy on telecommunications. Huawei is used pretty extensively in some large ISPs, large telecommunications firms, and I guess now we're going to have to swap those out.
Well, how many, in reality, how many companies actually have done the research and the development in 5G that Huawei has done? Is there anybody that even comes close?
I don't know the answer to that one, but they certainly, that's their claim to fame, is being on the cutting, leading, bleeding edge of everything. I don't know that specific answer, but I hope so. I hope someone else could replace that communications equipment so that we've got things that can continue to move that 5G forward.
And that was one of the criticisms that I read was, you know, you've been spending billions of dollars on every IPO for every social media app and mm-hmm. going crazy about things when you really should have been putting that money into technology. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't be standing there with your pants down now if you're not going to let Huawei in with the 5G.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't be in such a predicament if you had, you know, done your due diligence into 5G.
But if some of these claims of their backdoors and the spying techniques that they have, I mean, it's a legitimate concern to have. Telecommunications, absolutely, how everything gets transmitted, the internet, telephone calls, cable TV, that sort of stuff. If they've got access to everything we do that's sent over those devices, that's a concern as well.
And it hasn't the U.S. imposed some things like that in the past, having, you know, the NSA having backdoors into certain things?
Well,
I mean, isn't this very close to some things that the U.S. has done?
Sure, there's been insinuations or suggestions that the NSA type departments from government level officials or entities have tried to get various vendors to give them access under the guise of national security reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess at first blush, that sounds right. I mean, if they need to know what maybe two terrorists are discussing, they need a way to be able to do that. The problem is that that also gives them access to things that might not be related, as well as it gives them access to things that that might accidentally be seen during legitimate conversations. I've heard of that my entire career, 25 plus years of doing this stuff, none of it's really ever been really all that. I don't know how much credence you can put into that. But now we're getting to the stuff with what you just picked up there, where Apple actually says we're going to refuse to make it so that you can unencrypt our phones. We're going to, you know, because that was one of the things they would like them to do too. Any encryptions on your mobile devices, they want to have a backdoor into. And now that public information, or they're making that information public, that says we're not going to do that. Our customers' information is too important. And we'll have to find another way to discover the communications or the storage that the bad guys are doing.
I didn't mean to conflate the two issues there, but wanted to just point out there's similarities in arguments about things.
Yes.
But,
one thing I'll tack on there. It isn't just because it sounds all well and good that we're banning Huawei from sending devices over here. That might not scare too many people. Maybe they don't want to watch, but it has some collateral effects in that companies like Micron, Texas Instrument, and Intel send stuff over to Huawei for their devices, and they can't do that either. So it's kind of bidirectionally painful.
And I think a lot of people aren't going to care because they've never heard of Huawei, right? I can't remember how to spell it. It's like Huawei, and it looks like Huawei or something like that.
Yeah, Huawei. Yep.
Yeah. But pronounced Huawei. And most people haven't heard of it because it's not used in a lot of commercial-grade equipment. It's mostly professional-grade, telecom-grade, carrier-grade type stuff. So while they might not have heard of it, their communications certainly travel over it, probably on a daily basis.
They do phones as well in other countries.
I have seen Huawei
some of the
handsets.
Biggest selling phones, actually.
Yeah.
So some of the you know, most popular slash highest tech phones on the market, we can't buy.
Interesting. I also, in kind of related news, NOAA sent out a little alert saying that if we deploy 5G, are saying that if we deploy 5G, that technology is going to interfere with their weather data collection system that they've got for, you know, dew and other sorts of all the things that they collect. They collect a lot of things, but the network they've got set up to collect weather data is going to be adversely affected by 5G, and are asking, there are now Congress people asking to slow down the deployment of 5G until this can be studied. So that may be a bump in the road as well.
I literally was late getting here because I was just in the 2-hour meeting on 5G and about how can we get it here faster, because we need it for some, you know, particular activities. So
sure,
there's certainly both sides of the spectrum.
And it's, well, and it's coming. I mean, it's in Chicago now and
Minneapolis. Yeah.
And so, of course, Sioux Falls is going to fall in line next.
Falls is pretty quick, yeah.
I don't mean to give up any secrets from the meeting or anything, but are we getting close?
Sioux Falls is going to be quick.
That's okay. Well, they'll have to find a different way to collect their weather data then, if it truly interferes.
Yeah, and I guess I hadn't heard that. I don't know what the technological reason is and what the interference is, but you know, there's certainly a lot of logistics that are going to come with that as far as getting the you know, the equipment that's required for 5G. There's more, right? Because the 5G cell or the 5G distribution area is much smaller than 4G. 4G can go, you know, mile or two or more. Whereas the 5G components, you're going to have many more of them because the distance they cover is much smaller.
We should talk about that a little bit and back that up for folks that we throw 5G around, but we don't always explain the benefits and the, I don't want to use the word non-benefits, but the what you have to do to achieve those benefits. So
sure,
it's a much faster service.
Yep.
I think we can all understand that. It's a much larger pipe.
Yeah, I mean, kind of a good analogy I heard would be like water sprinklers. You might have one that covers a huge area, but it's going to, you know, in order to cover that huge area, it's going to have to pass by it, and then maybe 45 seconds later, it'll come back around and pass that area. But if you got a whole bunch of little ones, they're just kind of on all the time, they might water that area for the entire 20 minutes that you're watering rather than a third of that.
And they bring a lot more water to that area.
A lot more water, yeah, in that 20 minutes.
Right.
So that's essentially how it works. So instead of having this huge sprinkler that sprinkles internet, boy, wouldn't that be fun? I'm catching the internet.
So a transmitter on a tower is what you're saying.
Right, and these in particular are higher up for the most part, the 4G. And then your 5G, they might be as low as, you know, maybe the stoplight or just the top of a building. Then much closer together. But because of that closeness allows it to spread, you know, a faster internet. Because the real secret with wireless data is you can have as fast the data as you want. You just have to have bigger pipes. You have to send more data through more frequencies. And that's basically what 5G is doing. So with doing that, more frequencies, shorter range, have to have way more, you know, we don't call them towers. We'd call them hotspots, or I don't know
antennas,
what they call them.
How close are we talking? Every light pole or every other light pole? Kind of, you know, if I can use that as a measuring stick.
Well, I don't know the specific distances.
Yeah, I'm not sure
those,
that there's a specific.
But it is light poles because there was just an article in the newspaper the other day about how there's a contract with the city that's going to allow the 5G carriers to put them on the light poles. However, many of the light poles were not made for that and therefore will not support the weight of the antenna.
Or don't run power the right way.
Right, exactly. So those 5G companies are going to be required to foot the bill of replacing that light pole with a stronger one, as well as getting the correct connectivity to those poles.
Are these technically mesh? Do they talk to each other? Or are they just independent transmitters?
They can, but that's not going to be where you that's not going to be ideal, right? And so it's not going to be ideal to use up that bandwidth for those. So where possible, they're going to try to make sure that they've got some connectivity to them directly.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to have to, you know, when you're using data on your phone, you're not going to have to connect to one, connect to the other. It will be in that way, like 4G. One other side benefit of there being more is there'll be a lot fewer dead spots. You know, you might be used to, like, maybe this corner of the office is really terrible and you kind of have to move 5 feet. Generally speaking, that shouldn't be the case with 5G, just because there's more. That won't guarantee anything, but...
Yeah, I've actually heard of people who have called and said, hey, I've got terrible LTE service in this general area of the city. And in this case, it was Verizon. Verizon said, well, we're not going to, you know, build out in that area until the 5G comes along, because that will fix that problem there, because those, the dead spots in between the smaller circles become smaller. And so you get better reception. Is the theory. I guess we can wait to see what happens when it actually shows up, though.
Yeah, and another thing we should probably mention is, while 5G's newer, so you assume 5G, you know, hardware is more expensive, because they're smaller and have to broadcast less, they're actually a smaller investment than the 4G was when they were buying that, because they have to buy so many more. So it doesn't mean it is cheap. But, you know, they're buying, you know, I'm not sure what the ratio is, but from what I understand, it's dozens for every one tower that you might have been used to.
We'll continue to monitor the atmospheric condition of 5G coming up here and bring that to our listeners as we can. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have more from our panel, and then hopefully some calls and emails from you folks. The number 956-SDPB is our text number. 800-852-0214 is the number to give us a call. And of course, in the moment at sdpb.org to shoot us an email. We'll be right back. And welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We have the experts with us today. Joel Brovelite is here, Amos Aesop, and Heather Benson in our studio in Vermilion. We're all here to answer your questions and take your comments. 956-SDPB, 956-7372 is the number to send us a text. And most folks just use the email. It's inthemoment@sdpb.org. You're welcome to do that as well. Or stop out at our Facebook page if you still do that, facebook.com/techradio. Well, Amos, it was kind of a big week for Microsoft. They issued like 79 patches this week for security flaws and raised a few eyebrows.
Yeah, and one of those was for Windows XP and Windows 2003 machines as well, which
they officially abandoned 5 years ago.
Right. Those were things that they weren't going to look back on, but there happens to be an exploit for remote desktop services that is considered so significant that they were willing to go back and update those machines. You know, I run into customers using Windows XP and Windows 2003 all the time. It just happens, and not because customers or people are lazy or don't want to spend the money or don't want to do the upgrade. It's just sometimes the applications that are running on them, there's a business reason why those machines have to remain in place. There's all kinds of things you can do to protect them. But when it comes to things like an exploit that is a vulnerability in the code, you kind of sometimes have to rely on Microsoft to be generous enough to go back and fix something that they said we no longer are responsible for. And this is one of those cases.
It's interesting that you said that it wasn't laziness or money. I would have put my money on those two things first and then went business practices. But
well, I guess you could say it's money in the fact that some of the software that is written, that's running on those systems, is their bread and butter and is what makes them money, and they can't do without those systems. So in a way, it is income as opposed to, you know, the cost it would take to just upgrade the device.
And we all like comfort, right? We all reach a comfort level with technology even, that, I mean, I just saw in my basement today an old Gateway 2000 laptop. And I'm thinking, if there was a business reason that I would, you know, if I was, I'm still so comfortable with that, that I would still be using that if I needed to, you know, I probably wouldn't put it anywhere near the internet, but,
sure.
but right. I know it can probably drive that, you know, that sign, that electronic sign or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever it is I need to do for my business. I would probably still be using it.
That's a
good point. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we've got a manufacturing firm that we work with that had for the items they manufacture, they had to write their own homegrown applications, and it's very very technical. And those applications were written back in the days of Windows 2003 being the modern operating system, with no real plan to move forward. They have been utilizing that since then. And the amount of effort that they actually are going through to upgrade that homegrown system is tremendous, but it's just not to the point where they can move it yet. So those are the sorts of things that you know, we see that a lot in manufacturing, pretty specifically, where those old systems are just, they're around. They can't get rid of them without having downtime.
So this patch was for the remote desktop part of it, and they must have felt compelled to do something, because the last time they did this was the WannaCry malware that locked everybody out. And
this is considered a wormable, which is what they're calling it, which is a weird term.
Wormable,
able to be wormed.
I love it.
I don't know. But basically what that means is once one machine is infected, it's able to spread from that machine to other machines. So once one machine gets it, maybe because it's exposed to the internet, it can then infect machines that it's connected to internally that weren't previously exposed to the internet. And remote desktop protocol, which is what RDP is a bad thing to have exposed. But it happens, and a lot of people could be infected by this at some point.
I also thought it was interesting, the in more kind of security and ransomware news, ProPublica came out with a story this week that talked about this company called Proven Data, which was brought in apparently, you know, from 2015 to 2018, that SamSam virus or ransomware that took over, boy, a whole lot of those 200 and some in it from, you know, Atlanta and Newark and the port of San Diego, and there was a hospital in there in Los Angeles and some very high profile places, but there was about 200 attacks. Turns out the company they brought in that said that they could you know, bring in the latest tools to help these people out, just paid off the ransomware people and got their systems unlocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and which is bad because that money goes to bad actors. It turns out they laundered that Bitcoin through like 12 different accounts, but they figured out the two Iranian guys that did it. An interesting story from ProPublica if anybody's interested in reading that.
And that's an interesting topic that actually came up yesterday at that security conference, was the fact that there are companies whose sole business is negotiating ransomware payments. Your customer, let's say somebody gets ransomware, they get the screen that comes up, just the stereotypical, you know, you must pay this in the next 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And the customer says, I don't know what to do next. I don't own any Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency. I don't know how to contact them. I don't know where to go get Bitcoin. There's companies out there that A, will try to do negotiation with, if there's a method of communication available, they will try to negotiate it to reduce that amount, and then B, will just take care of the payment and getting it all done for you. So it's really, you know, its own little economy there, as a way to, you know, that's spawned from ransomware.
Well, this did like $30 million in damage. Total, and the guy and the they made like $6 million in the end of things, so the risk and reward are really skewed there.
Yeah, and you know there's ways to protect yourselves and from ransomware, but if you don't have that in place and the ransomware happens to affect something that is show stopping for your business, sometimes I've seen them as little as $200. I've seen them as high as, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, but sometimes it's worth it.
Is there one thing that you can say on today's show that's that people aren't doing that can be the most effective way of staying safe from ransomware?
Well,
one or two things.
It's stop clicking on things that you shouldn't be clicking on, right?
Okay.
Which is easier said than done in some cases. But, you know, still the number one way of that stuff getting in is through a phishing email or I shouldn't say a phishing email, but through an email that gets you to click on a link that then downloads something that then installs, et cetera. So making sure that you're not blindly clicking on things that you don't know where it's going or you weren't expecting. And then two, even on home computers, there's endpoint protection you can put on that's specifically geared towards stopping ransomware in its tracks. It monitors the files when it starts to see things get encrypted. And large number of files in a similar area start to change, it will kill that process and roll back those files. So making sure that you've got endpoint protection that's specifically designed to mitigate ransomware is a good way.
Joel, you had a phishing attempt. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah.
You got this week?
Yeah. Phishing, for those who don't know, is a hacking attempt using telecommunications, phones, could be analog or digital. It's actually from the old analog hacking days. Phishing spelled with a PH, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
I started getting a FaceTime call, which is Apple's video conferencing software built into all the iOS devices. And it was a call I did not recognize, which not unusual for anybody out there, I'm sure, to get a call you don't recognize. Probably pretty unusual to get a video call you don't recognize. So I immediately was suspicious right away, because I'm immediately suspicious right away at all times. And I did a little looking online, and it was definitely a fake mock-up human being. So I'm not sure what the idea was. Maybe they were just trying to verify that it worked. Maybe it was going to install something. I don't know. I just completely ignored it. Imagine there wasn't any problem, but I have heard of this before from other people. Never happened to me before, so just be wary. You can get phone calls that could cause you all sorts of problems. You can also get video calls, whether they're using Skype or FaceTime or another video chat. So be careful.
That happened to the WhatsApp folks. There was an exploit out, and for those that don't know what WhatsApp is, it's an encrypted communication application that allows people to basically make phone calls.
Owned by Facebook, right?
It is owned by
Facebook. It is owned by Facebook now, yeah. And
I read somewhere, I think it's the most prolific text-based messaging application in the world, more used outside the United States than in the United States.
Yep.
However, it's certainly gaining traction here for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. It's certainly gaining traction here with like journalists and people that travel overseas and maybe need their communications to be completely private. That's the idea anyway.
Well, it came out in the Financial Times that there's an Israeli spy firm that developed an exploit that could inject the malware into a targeted phone and steal data from them by just calling them. The targeted phone did not need to answer the phone, and it didn't show up in the call logs that you ever got a call, because this took care of that as well.
Sure.
But they so they patched Monday.
Yeah.
they found out about it and in early May, and just patched it on Monday. So hopefully that's the last we'll hear of that. But that's scary.
Well, and WhatsApp, while doing text messages, also does support voice and video calls as well. So, that could be, I'm assuming it was a WhatsApp call, but that's interesting. Yeah. So make sure your phones are up to date.
Yeah. And your software as well. That's a good hint for everybody. Cause we all say that, we say it a million times, don't click on links and suspicious emails or text, or don't download shady apps. You know, we tick through those almost every week.
There's been a lot of recent news about, apps that get in unknowingly into the quote-unquote safe zone, the app stores, that are doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And so, you know, when you go to Apple or Google's stores, you assume that those have been vetted and that they're clean, but unfortunately, sometimes they don't catch them until they've been out. You know, it's been quite a while, but they said one of the most shady type of applications you could install at one point was the kind that used to allow you to have an app to turn on a flashlight on your phone. That was before the operating system had it built in. Mm-hmm. You know, but for me, I know I had one installed before it was a part of Android. But people would download them, they were free, but then it would also rummage through your phone and try to dig up any information that was in there. So, you know, you just have to be careful.
Absolutely. We are close enough to the break. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a couple of email questions or text questions about iPads and computers for school. I guess it's that time of year where parents are thinking about sending tech away with their little ones to college this fall. So we're going to delve into that after this. And we're back with the May 17th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We are joined in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls by Joel Borovolite and Amos Aesop. And we haven't heard much from Heather in Vermilion. Sorry about that, Heather. Heather Benson, our social media person.
No problem.
Hi, Heather.
Yeah, just, you guys have had some interesting topics you're working through. It's been fascinating.
I'm sure your eyes glazed over and you're just up here talking tech. And we'll get you involved. Speaking of getting involved, we've got some text messages from folks, easier questions I think we can knock out. As far as Apple iPads are concerned, are the Pros, so the iPad Pro, is that the only model available now?
It is not. There are two models of the iPad Pro available, 12.9 and 11-inch. But they also, the iPad Air is also available, and it is new. It has a faster processor, Touch ID. So that one starts at around 500-ish, and that's new. That's a 10.5-inch screen. That's kind of the iPad you might be used to, although likely a little thinner. Still has the button on it.
Okay.
Doesn't use Face ID. And then, of course, they have regular iPad, which is slightly smaller screen, 9.7-inch. Also uses Touch ID. That one's $329. That's kind of the previous model, and then now they have a new version of the iPad Mini, which it has a smaller screen, but kind of has all of the latest tech, the Retina display, Touch ID, faster processor. So they've kind of refreshed the entire line. So you have, what is that, 6, maybe 7 different models, you know, not counting different storage space and that type of thing.
Sure.
So lots of models.
So the difference is, besides price, is display and then processor.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't really have to worry too much about the processor. For the most part, whichever one you choose is going to be plenty fast for you. And if you need a lot of horsepower, you're probably already looking on the high end anyway. You know, kind of just figure out what size you need. And, you know, your price point's going to kind of fit you in there. One kind of anomaly in that setup is the iPad Mini is slightly more expensive than the kind of entry-level iPad, but that's mostly because it's got all the latest and greatest and it's faster for the people that really need a lot of power, but they want it in a smaller footprint. So yeah, lots of different choices. You don't have to just get the high-end iPad Pro.
Okay. Barbara writes, I have a very, very old PC, is utilized as a for printing purposes. I do the internet, but that's through a Mac. So I believe this PC is not hooked up to the internet. It is networked to the Mac that is hooked up to the internet. Does this make me vulnerable? It does say it is not connected to the internet. So a PC that's not connected to the internet, unless somebody walks up and shoves some media in that, a floppy drive, it looks like, by the photo,
and
she's
got
not vulnerable
a
there.
Tape backup there. Yeah, it might be so old that she's not vulnerable. That is, it's tough to tell. I mean, if there is any sort of network connectivity, it's possible that something could get in.
Is that a power cord wrapping around?
What is that? Intel Inside.
And you know,
it's a Pentium processor even. So
it's not likely.
Old.
I mean, your computer could be vulnerable through all sorts of connectivity that you may not think is internet, but maybe wireless. Whether that's Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, using it for the printer, may not be directly hooked up to the network. So I guess the short version is, yes, it's possible, depending on what you have it connected to, but I think Amos is right. It's probably old enough it isn't. And usually something like that, unless somebody wants to get in for some reason, like you have the, you know, secret recipe for Coca-Cola on there somehow, right, people are probably not looking to hack into
it. And if
it.
All you're using it is from your Mac, using it to print to a device, then you're probably not running executables on it, you're not opening emails, you're not going to websites on it.
And then I, you know, should also mention that because it's to a Mac, that makes it slightly more safe, just in the fact that there's not a lot of spyware and comparatively, I should say, that would infect a Mac. There is some, but it's a little safer.
Plus,
than
it would have to be something that would be able to get onto a Mac that
right,
would infect
of course,
a PC.
Yes. There's lots of contingencies.
I would actually be really
basically
impressed
we're not saying that we just don't want to say that no, you're safe
right.
Because you know, you're not 100% safe ever, no matter what. But we think you're about as close as you can come.
I think a hacker could walk past it and trip and shove a floppy drive in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the chances are about that.
I think what would be hardest about that was getting the virus on a floppy drive to fit.
Yeah, no
that might be the hardest
no
part.
Kidding.
I think finding somebody I think that those hackers have aged out by now.
Right.
But that's a great. We'll take all questions, Barbara. Thank you for the question.
Mm-hmm.
We generally believe where the safe-o-meter is pegging towards the right hand side there. And I had a question today that brought up a really interesting response, and it was your typical: my son or daughter's going off to college this fall. What should I buy them? And my response was the typical: what does the college or university say? And what's your budget? And the response was, the budget's going to fit the need, but the university said, gave a kind of a broad range of specs and just said that, you know, anything's going to work, it just needs to fit these specs. Our IT department supports Macs, PCs, Chromebooks, whatever you're going to bring, we'll support that. So, okay, it isn't saying you need a particular model or a particular brand. That's good. I've seen that before. There are some institutions, there are some professions, I guess, or some courses of study, some lines of study mm-hmm. that say, you must do this.
And a lot of times that might depend solely on where you go to school. They might prefer that you use one over the other, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah. And I found it interesting. I said, you know, what you don't want to do is spend a whole bunch of money on a laptop. And it's vulnerable for several reasons. It's vulnerable to theft, dropping, spilling your kombucha on it, you know, whatever. There's a lot of things that can happen to this really expensive laptop if that's the way you decide to go. Maybe that isn't the way to go. And this person said, you know, that's kind of what the university said. They said you may want to consider a desktop machine. It's less likely to be stolen. Which leads back to the, you know, they're even sort of admitting that these are high targets for theft.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I know if I was going to university right now, I would still get a laptop and I would just take care of it. I mean, you know, just you might need to study here or there, or you take notes in class, or depending on what you do. I think I would, you know, without any specifics from the school, I would find out what maybe students that are going there studying the same thing are buying. Maybe that student knows somebody there or can contact a faculty advisor. You know, what are they using? Otherwise, honestly, I mean, I do kind of agree with the school. just get what you want, and it's going to be fine. I mean, the school wouldn't say, you know, we support everything if they wanted you to get something specific. So I mean, ultimately, I'd probably get what the student is comfortable with so that they don't have to relearn anything while they're also trying to learn.
Well, they're bilingual. They do both. She has done Chromebook in school in Sioux Falls.
Then they should get a Mac.
And a Mac at home.
Obviously, they should get a Mac.
And here was my thing was.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. In journalism, a lot of Macs. Am I right? I'm not a journalist. I'm sitting in front of one though. So
yes.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say it's 100%, but I mean, new. I think when I see journalists, when I talk to them, I generally see a Mac. But again, I think whatever you're comfortable with is probably what you should go with.
And here was here's an interesting part of the conversation. I said, you know, you can kind of have it both ways. So here's the part I'm leaving out is this student wants to maybe do some dabbling in some video editing, so probably Adobe Premiere, something similar. Wants it to be friendly for doing video and things. And a lot of times, unless you're going to really trick out a laptop, you're probably talking a desktop machine for that. They said, you know, I really want to take my laptop to the computer or to the library. I want to take it to class. I want to do the things that you just said. I said, you know, you can have it both ways in today's world. You can have a fairly high-powered desktop machine that is a whiz at editing and gaming back at the apartment or the dorm or wherever. You're locked away so it's secure and, you know, whatever. But you can also get a relatively inexpensive Chromebook, or you don't even have to buy the latest MacBook. You could buy a used MacBook. There are some years-old MacBooks that are still doing the job.
Sure.
I mean, seriously doing the job. You can get by with something that is in that riskier part of the equation. Taking it out, doing things with it, brings all those risks that we just talked about. And through your cloud account, have it all go to the cloud so that it's accessible from home, from your desktop when you're there, and you're not spending all that money on something you're hauling around with you. That was sort of the conclusion I came to, was why not get something more reasonable to go around and take notes with, but still have that powerhouse available to you if you want to do some editing. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I 100% agree with that. I mean, I think, you know...
Where's the flaw in my logic?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's a flaw. I mean, it's just not my experience. I mean, I think a lot of great video editing is done on higher-end laptops. And if this person just wants to start getting into it, I don't think you need to have what somebody might, you know, a professional who, you know, 9 hours a day is video editing. I don't think you need that. I mean, there are lots of shows that are produced on iPhones and 3-year-old MacBook Pros. So I think any one you get is going to work perfectly well. What I will say is some of the new MacBook Pros have Touch ID.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes them very secure and a lot less interesting to steal, because like Face ID on phones and iPads, you can't break into them, and they can be erased remotely, and they're just a lot harder to, you know, fence, as it were. So anybody who really knows what they're doing, you know, they steal this laptop and then they can't do anything with it unless they're, you know, crazy technical. And by that time, you know, you've kind of wasted the time that you could have stolen something else. So I think they're relatively safe as far as, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think laptops are kind of what people are using for that. I think you just be safe about how you take care of it. But you would want to do that with anything you have, whether it's your wallet or your phone or, you know.
But we, in essence, we do agree. You can buy a used, let's just say, MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
It's very capable of doing what you're going to do and not spend that much money right off the bat.
For sure.
I've been, so a lot of other folks, it didn't happen in this case, but some parents will tell me, okay, this needs to be the biggest whiz-bang laptop now because I want this to be the, you know, I want this to last for 4 years.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
And we got to get out of that mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to spend all my money up front and nothing for the next 3 years.
Or it may be, but you won't really know that until you get started. I mean, the other thing, what I'll mention about a Mac is you buy that, as you mentioned, you can sell a 2-3 year old Mac and actually, you know, get money out of that because there's a market for that. I don't know, Amos, if somebody was getting a PC, what would you recommend?
If they were getting
a PC, you know, you got a brand or something.
You're going to college, and if theft is actually the concern, I mean, if you're in a spot where, you know, maybe you obviously understand your propensity for accidentally leaving it in the commons area, theft is you're on a campus where it's not unheard of. I honestly would go with what's the cheapest thing I could get by with in case I did accidentally set it down as I was, you know, eating lunch or something like that. I don't think that, you know, somebody who's going to be stealing something is going to go over and examine it to see, is this something I can, you know, I can actually erase and start over with.
Oh, I'm just saying that I just know that a lot of, you know, rings that go, there was a report I read about, you know, MacBooks are kind of being overlooked just like iPhones are. And newer Android phones because they just can't be sold. So they're looking for other things now.
I honestly think I think a Chromebook is a great idea for someone who's going to college, because if in 2 years it's no longer capable of doing what you want to do, you're out like $180, right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's almost disposable, as opposed to a $1,500 either high-end PC or a MacBook Pro. If you're the one who's paying the bill and your child is the one who's taking it to school, I'd start there. And if it doesn't do the job, then maybe look at what you have to do. But we were actually, coincidentally, just yesterday, a Chromebook with a little bit of a memory upgrade is one of the least expensive, high-powered hacking devices you can get, because everything is web-based these days, right? You can go to web pages, and as long as it can run Chrome or Safari or Internet Explorer or whatever it happens to be, you can do most of anything anymore. So,
yeah, and one thing I'd tack on there is, you know, if this is a worry, make sure whatever files you're creating, you're automatic. You've got a mirror to the cloud, however it is you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. A lot of schools have that already kind of set up for you. Make sure you're doing that because, mm-hmm. You know, it may not even be stolen. Maybe the hard drive gets, you know, goes bad or possibly you spill something on it as you were talking. You know, you don't want to lose that, you know, final paper or thesis, you know. So
does that work? Can I use that as an excuse?
I know a student that went to the IT department and said, hey, I had my thing and it something blipped. And they said, well, did you have it backed up to the cloud? And he went, and they went, you doofus.
So that's the new my dog ate my homework.
That's the new my dog ate my homework. Yeah, no excuses anymore for not backing it up in the cloud. Well, that's interesting. I appreciate that point of view. Just real quickly, what is the sweet spot on a used Mac as far as years old versus price? You know, are you good 2-3 years back, 4 years back, 8 years back?
Yeah, it could be all sorts of things. That's a bigger question we probably have time for. But, you know, again, just as long as the specs fit what the school says.
All right. Well, something to think about and future topics as well. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today's show. And I thank my panelists, Joel Brovelight, for being here. Amos Asup from Exigent. Great to have you on board. Heather, I'm sorry we didn't get to you much today. And we'll work on that for future episodes. My apologies. A reminder, SDPB is always here for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on Listen. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.